right, welcome everyone to Radio Free Nintendo episode 151. It's the podcast, people, in the immortal words of John Lindemann, and this is your host, Jonathan Metz. John Lindemann is here, as always.
Mm-hmm. In the house.
Okay,
he can't get rid of him, apparently.
He is thrilled. James Jones is not thrilled, but he's going to be our ray of sunshine tonight.
James is my sunshine, my only sunshine.
Oh, Jesus. What was that about bringing up the gay and everyone, John?
James has had a tough week, and we're going to do our best to cheer him up. Yep. And, of course, Greg Leahy is there waiting in the wings.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody.
There you go, just like Bette Midler. Now, yeah, I just want to have, really, and this might sound hokey, but the day we're recording this, just found out an hour or two ago that Michael Jackson has passed away, and I just want to have a moment of silence. Thank you. In all seriousness, I'm a fan, and that's weird, and it sucks. So, we're going to talk about Nintendo today. We're going to have new business, and then we're going to do listener mail, and, oh yeah, John has some really good new business for once. And
what are you saying about all your judgment, Johnny?
Greg's just digging into the insult vault.
That's impressive, actually. I didn't say it was an insult. You've cast that as
much,
John, not me.
So right. Basically, to all you listeners, you can pretty much just
Greg
stop
doesn't even know
now.
What connotation means.
Yeah, actually, I got a couple of good ones for this podcast, Johnny. First up, I decided to actually sit down after months and months of anticipation. The press camping out around my house, wondering when it's going to happen. I finally played Gradius V on the PS2.
Hell yes.
It's a great game. It's a great game.
Yeah, well, that's what I've been trying to tell you for a long time.
Yeah.
Like years.
And, you know, I regret actually not playing it a long time ago.
I thought you were going to say I regret playing it because I was just going to leave.
I don't know. After this podcast, I probably may because I had to talk to you jackasses about it. But whatever. it's probably one of the best shooters I've ever played in terms of just being – it's difficult but not so difficult that you're just like, yeah, I'm not going to devote my life to this just to beat it like something like Ikaruga. Which is just so blisteringly hard. But probably my favorite thing about it, I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, it has, you know, great graphics, I think it's done by Konami's Tokyo team, I think it was.
Oh, it's Treasure.
Yeah, Treasure.
Is it? Is it because, see, I was looking at that, and actually, I don't think their name is actually listed on the box anywhere.
No, this is pretty widely known that Treasure were involved in the development of that.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, with reference to Ikaruga, it does have something that Ikaruga has, which I think is quite useful in that you can play, and also Sin of Punishment had this, you can play bits, levels, you know, sort of out of sequence to practice them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you've beaten them already, so it's kind of like you can sort of hone your skills at certain levels so that then when you play through it sort of for real, you know, you can just play, you can presumably just beat those bits really quickly and then focus on the bits that you're actually sort of, you know, the furthest most in the game. Mm-hmm. So I like that because it is really frustrating when you play these old school games and it's just like you end up losing a bunch of lives on a level that you've beaten before and then it's like, is it really worth going on? No.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's nice to be able to practice them out of sequence like that, and that's something that Treasure's done a lot. So, you know, so that's another of their hallmarks.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about it is the way that you can manipulate what your options do, your little guys that float around. See, because when I first played it a couple times, I really didn't know, like, I think the R1 button is what you use to control the options and what they do. And I really wasn't using that at first. Because I was using like type, there's four types kind of armaments you can choose from. And I was mostly using, I think, 2, 3, and 4. But I think type 1 is the one where you can actually hold your options in place and then shoot 360 degrees.
Yes, that's the one.
And so when you first start the game and you look at the different types, type 1 doesn't really look that cool. So I was like, type 3, type 4, they look neat. But I switched over to type 1. And when I finally figured out what to do, it was just kind of one of those, the heavens opened up kind of thing. I was like, oh my God.
Well, you end up playing the game in a completely different way.
It's a totally new level of strategy to gameplay.
John had a road to Damascus moment playing a Gradius game.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing.
We shall now call him Pawn.
Because, you know, most of the other games play so similarly. You know, it is kind of nice to have that level of innovation in a game. So it's kind of is very faithful to the series. It is very old school in sort of its sensibilities in some ways. But at the same time, you know, you are getting probably the most substantial evolution of the gameplay has ever been.
Yeah.
So that's really nice.
Well, what I really liked about it is that actually, I mean, it really improves gameplay to a great degree because you don't have any more of those cheap sort of, okay, well, there's a cannon up on the ceiling that you have to move your ship right up to the very top, but don't hit the top because you'll die. You know, you don't have to wedge yourself in to get certain enemies anymore. You can actually kind of tactically, you know, place yourself in the middle of, you know, a cluster of enemies and then freeze your options and shoot all the way around, and it's really, really good. I mean, I would recommend
it. What I love about that
everybody.
Feature is that it doesn't automatically make the game easier.
No.
I mean, you do have to learn to use it, and there are disadvantages. I mean, when you're doing that, you can't really move your ship around, or at least you can't concentrate on it as well.
Yeah.
So you have to think more as you're playing the game. So it does add more challenge on one level, but it lets you do so much more that it balances out. It's just so well done.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I think I've made it about like a little ways into the second level, so I haven't really played it too much, but I'm definitely going to play it some more. For sure. It's really, really good.
To settle the earlier question, it was developed in part by Treasure under the supervision of an internal Konami team.
Yeah.
Oh, like Metroid Other M, perhaps.
Well, they did a hell of a job, I can tell you.
Oh,
that.
And John, I don't know if you know anyone locally who would be interested in playing Gradius 5 with you, but it has a very good two-player mode.
Hmm.
So is the wife into hardcore shooters? I bet that's a good way to introduce her to gaming.
There's a joke there that I'm just not going to make, but...
Well, speaking of shooters...
Speaking of shooters, James, let's just go off down a different avenue there.
That was the worst breaking I've ever heard.
I'm not listening, James.
What else is new?
this other game I happen to be playing is The Conduit, which I picked up on Wednesday.
Do you want to make any Carl Star proclamations about the fact the review will be up before this podcast?
No, because I don't know how long it's going to take me to beat the single player. That's kind of the.
Do you want to make any John style predictions as to when you'll stop playing it?
Well, let me just say that I have a bit more incentive to finish this than I did say the Spiderwick Chronicles. Let's just throw that out there.
I was going a Mario Galaxy approach on that one, but okay.
let's allow him to actually talk about the game itself
instead of attacking my morals and ethics. Thank you very much. Actually, I'm very, very impressed with it. I started off. Typically, what I do with most first-person shooters is I play through the single player, but since we had our Wi-Fi night last night, which actually went really well, there was a whole bunch of people online.
And they were all playing The Conduit?
Yep. There was at least...
Early adopters.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody picked it up. I played a five-person match, all with people from our forums, and there were probably about between 8 and 10 people on during the night. Which is pretty impressive.
Was everybody using WeSpeak?
Yeah, you've got WeSpeak now, haven't you, John? So
yeah,
did you use that?
Yep.
Did you immediately regret using it with our forum members?
No, they're all really cool. It was like I was playing mainly with Kraken, with Stratos and Kraken, and a couple of other people. I know Brandog hopped in later on, and I'm sure there's some
Brandog.
People that there's some people. Caliban was in there too. And I'm sure there's some people that I'm forgetting that will be eternally bitter at me for not mentioning them, but,
send your hate mail too.
But yeah, WeSpeak, it's passable. It does the trick. And the one thing I was thinking when I was playing it is that it really does add, a lot to the multiplayer, death matches and the different modes.
Oh,
it really,
yeah.
I mean, it's, you can't beat it. I mean, it's funny because, we were playing against, Kraken. There was three of us in a game where, you know, the three of us did have WeSpeak. He was the only one that didn't, and it just wasn't the same. I mean, I could kill, you know, Stratos, who did have WeSpeak, and we could talk smack right afterwards, you know, laugh about it. You hear the person, you get that kind of visceral reaction right away when you do something, especially if something crazy happens. But because Kraken, he didn't have We Speak, it's kind of like he walks up, kills you. It's kind of no reaction there. It's just sort of, you know, it's not the same kind of feel. So if you get everybody in there, everybody has We Speak. It's actually, I kind of like it. I dare say I even like it probably even more than headsets, just because it's kind of more of a sort of just kind of an open feel. Like, I don't know, there's a different feel to it than headsets. With headsets, it's almost kind of like
strapped to your head. I mean, there's an advantage there, I can see.
But I don't know, just like talking, it just seems more of almost more of a conference call instead of being like, a lot of times with headsets, I feel like I'm on a walkie-talkie and, you know.
Drawn.
Yeah, it can just be kind of annoying. I think headsets are really overrated.
So you said that you were like, you know, you were like, you guys were like laughing over WeSpeak when something crazy happened. And my question is the Conduit like an interesting enough shooter that crazy things happen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some really good modes in there. There's the one that I liked the most was ASE Football. So, I mean, one of the things when you play through the single player game, you have what's called the All-Seeing Eye, which is this orb. It's very similar. It's very similar to your scan visor in Metroid Prime, where you can scan walls and you can see, you know, hidden messages and stuff like that, and you carry it around and you can unlock stuff with it, things like that. But they take that object and they have kind of a hot potato game called ASE Football in multiplayer, and it's a riot. I mean, the whole goal of the game is to hold the ASE as long as you can. And so, you know, it's pretty much like one person grabs it, everybody just swarms that person. And there's also Bounty Hunter, which is also fun, where one person is tagged, and everybody has to go after that person, and they get docked points if they kill other people that aren't tagged. So, yeah, I mean, it really excels. I think I did play, I believe, in a 12-player match at one point, and frame rate got kind of sluggish in parts, not bad, not anything that would really affect gameplay too much, but you could kind of tell, like, as soon as we hopped back into a 4-player game, it was a lot smoother, played really, really well. So I'd say probably it's probably good maybe up to about 6 to 8 people, and then kind of like once you get up to the 10 and 12, that's when starts feeling kind of slow, but it's still smooth, but it's just kind of slow.
It's going to depend on everybody's connection also.
Yeah, I guess so. And the more people you have, the more bullets in the gun for one of them being bad, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep, and you know, I didn't have any disconnect problems. There was no lag, nothing like that. My Wii did freeze up at one point, actually, and I don't know what that had to do with. So to the point where I had to power it down and power it back up.
Right. I've had it happen before, but
Yeah, it does happen every so often for whatever reason.
Yeah,
I had it happen. I think I was playing Prime 3. That's the only instance that I could think of where it happened.
Yeah.
I remember it happening with Prime 1 on GameCube. That game froze up on me a couple times.
So John, I mean, you played the single player a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any initial thoughts on, you know, how it kind of measures up to other shooters, so yeah, things like the level design, enemies, weapons?
Yeah, I think of John as being a pretty discerning shooter fan. I mean, because you play him on 360 and PS3 quite a bit. So.
Yeah. You got a good frame of reference there.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, definitely, you know, my first thought going through, you know, the single player game was, wow, this is a full blown first person shooter. You know, I was just thinking how much bullshit it is that, you know, when you hear devs say, oh, well, we're going to tailor our game to the Wii audience. This game is not, quote unquote, tailored to the Wii audience. It's not dumbed down in any way, shape, or form. I mean, it's a first-person shooter all the way across the board. You know, it has everything you would expect. It's very much, you know, a modern first-person shooter in the sense that, when you go online, you have different ranks you can attain. There's different achievements you can open up. In the single player campaign, there's hidden stuff in the single player campaign, and there's voiceovers, like very well done voiceovers, lots of cutscenes. I mean, it's like as you play through, you can kind of see that there's elements of BioShock, there's, you know, elements of Perfect Dark, there's elements of all of these other shooters that have kind of both done something different in the past, and it's kind of if you're looking for something that's if you're looking for something new and groundbreaking, The Conduit isn't going to give that to you because, you know, a lot of, like, its storyline is pretty cliche. It does, like, your typical sort of X-Files, government conspiracy, Roswell, UFO kind of thing. But I mean, it's very much a complete package in terms of a first-person shooter, and I mean, really, there's no excuse for anybody not to do stuff of that caliber on the Wii from now on, I think.
What about the controls? How do they kind of shake out? Obviously, everyone talks about how customizable they are, but are they, you know, they work for you? Because for someone who is used to, you know, very comfortable with dual analog, making the sort of movement over, how's that gone?
It was interesting because it did require some adjustment. I fooled around with customizing the controls a bit, and it's very easy to adjust it such that kind of mouse look sort of thing is just way too, you know, you're flying all over the place kind of thing.
You can make it as sort of instantly sort of responsive as you like, but obviously that's probably going to be too much at the very top end, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can adjust the size of the bounding box to determine, you know, how far you have to
start moving your point of view, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You can adjust that, and you can also adjust on top of that how fast you turn when you do make that move.
When you do start moving, you're right, yeah.
And you can adjust how far
now,
you can look up, look
can't
down.
You change your movement speed?
Yeah, you can.
I've read that in a couple of reviews, like you can change how fast you move, and it's like, it seems like that's one thing that the game developers would kind of want to design their AI around.
Yeah, balancing issues, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
I don't know how they adjust that in the single-player game. I know you can't adjust that stuff in the multiplayer, obviously. All that stuff's
that's
locked.
That's good.
But yeah, I'll have to look. I didn't see that in there. Maybe I just overlooked it. Because the thing is, there are so many different kind of menus that you can go through to change things.
Do you think it's overly complex?
Well, I'll tell you what. I did go back to the defaults. I mean, I think that the default controls, they're perfectly fine. I mean, you can tweak all you want. I know that the funniest thing that the guys got a kick out of last night was Amy saw me playing it, and she comes by and she's like, "Can I try that?" I'm like, "Okay." And it was really funny because at the time I was kind of coming to grips with the Wii controls, and I was still kind of having a hard time, right? Like, because, you know, I'm playing people, obviously, you know, playing somebody in deathmatch is a lot different than playing the single player. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't really hide from them very well. You know, it's a lot more complicated. And I was coming to grips trying to control it in that kind of context, and seeing somebody else try to do it who doesn't really play first-person shooters at all, she was having a real hard time just kind of getting the mouse look down, because it's completely different than dual analog. It's completely different.
Yeah.
You have to conserve your movement more. You know, you can't just go in there waving the Wii remote around, or else you're just not going to, you're going to be completely out of control most of the time. So you almost have to kind of like mentally rein yourself in, like, because especially with the Wii, where you're so used to, I mean, everything is predicated on, you know, moving the remote around a lot, and, you know, everything is, you know, like Wii bowling type stuff, right? and it's very different having to sit there and kind of like just make sure that you kind of hold everything in place and then just gradually move it around.
But isn't that the advantage of the ability to customize things like the bounding box? Is that you can, how conscious you need to be of the movement? So you could say, I want the bounding box to be huge. Well, you can kind of float around a little bit.
I just don't.
That's the reason for it in principle.
Yeah.
I don't know if it works, but.
But I just don't think you, I don't really think you get much benefit out of tweaking it. I mean, it's just, it's so incremental that.
You still just have to adjust to the idea of, you know, like being controlled in how you move the pointer.
Yeah.
Principally, you think.
Yeah.
See, what I thought was interesting in talking to some of the people who worked on the game at E3, they're all like, "Yeah, we don't use the standard controls." And I was thinking to myself, if nobody who made the game likes the standard controls, why are they the standard controls?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Well, I think they focus tested the shit out of it. That's
And I mean, if they've been playing the game for hundreds of hours during its development, they obviously have a very different perspective from someone who's coming in, you know, sort of like what Job was talking about, sort of cold to the game. So.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are obvious reasons for the differences, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in terms of the controls, I would sum them up as a customizable version of the Metroid Prime controls, effectively.
Yeah. And, I mean, they were good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I found them to be very, very enjoyable, really. But, obviously, without the lock-on stuff.
They do have lock-on, but it's kind of loose lock-on.
Oh, okay. Well, they do. Oh,
it's not like... it's not going to lock your focus on the guy.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you a perspective on the person to keep the camera somewhat close to where they are.
It sort of locks the – it's more like a Z-lock in Zelda, isn't it? I mean, it just locks the camera.
Yeah, it locks the camera so they stay in focus and you move around right. them. It doesn't lock your aim on them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but neither did Metroid Prime 3 necessarily because you had lock-on free aim. So
right.
I'm just wondering how different is it from that?
It's less locked on than lock on free aim.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You kind of have to guide it more than in Metroid Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. John, I'm definitely glad that you got this early on, and I'm very curious. I'm thinking about picking it up possibly next week.
I am too.
You know, I respect your opinion, particularly on this genre. And if you think it's good, then...
Pressure. <It's>... Pressure.
Yeah, I mean, just overall, I mean, I think with this, with the Conduit, it's the draw is really the online play. I will say,
that's
like...
That's the lasting appeal, like...
Like, ASC football with six people is a laugh riot. It's hilarious. Nice. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
And you can actually hear each other laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's pretty echoey.
Yeah, right. I know. I've experienced that with it.
The laughter just goes on and on.
Yep.
Just like
it really
show.
Does. It really does.
It's going to be interesting to hear, you know, your thoughts evolve on this game over the weeks. I mean,
I mean,
obviously you're interested in it. I think this is the longest new business that you've ever done.
Yeah. Well, just a few more thoughts on this. The enemies seem kind of, repetitive. You see a lot of the same enemies over and over again, but a lot of this stuff is kind of part of the genre of first person shooters. You know, it's seldom do you see a first person shooter that actually has enemies that aren't repetitive.
Right.
But one of my favorite things in it is throwing grenades in it. You do it with the nunchuck, and it is so much fun.
It is.
It feels so good because you can sit there, and because you can sit there, and you can, once you get the feel of it, you can throw grenades perfectly. You can throw them as far away as you want, and they don't act realistically. You can just chuck them like a football. And so you can sit there and you can see enemies so far away and you can just toss your grenade out there and you can just go like a football.
Is it just like a button press or is there any kind of element of nuance in terms of how hard you do it?
There is definitely, there's nuance to it.
So it's really using the accelerometer.
Oh, yeah.
So there's some boom blocks in this.
It completely is.
If you're going to do stuff, at least, use the advantages of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is nice.
Like, definitely, I mean, once you get your touchdown, you can just toss grenades. You can toss them right in front of you, toss them at guys, or you can gauge it so you'll drop it right into the middle of guys that are just really far away from you. It's really good. So I give it the thumbs up.
Nice.
I want to say one thing, John.
Mm-hmm.
I just bought a Wii Speak thanks to you, you bastard.
No.
And I'm finally going to get to use mine. So, I haven't been playing many games this week is what I was going to get to. I just moved halfway across the country just for the summer. But I left my beautiful Colorado behind for the very warm Houston area, and I decided not to bring my TV with me. And I'm not sure if I've ever mentioned my TV on the show before. It's a kind of a funny case in that the TV that I left behind was an HD TV. I actually got it like really early in the HD era when I didn't really know what I was doing. Okay, so let me paint this picture for you. It is a 27-inch 4x3 tube.
Yeah.
Tube
doesn't make any
HD
sense.
TV.
Oh, it's one of those HD TVs that standard dimensions. Oh,
and it is a tube. Okay,
yes,
so this thing weighs like 200
Johnny,
pounds.
You have a certifiable artifact for the Museum of Television.
I remember
and Radio.
Johnny used to talk about how pointless widescreen was.
Yeah,
on the show once upon a time, but
that's more of a rant on movies. But I mean, for games, because games are actually coded in the ratio that TVs are made in now, it makes more sense now that widescreen gaming is
now that you're past the GameCube
era. Yes. Right, exactly.
Well, it's funny because that particular, I remember those TVs being phased out, the 4x3 HDs, and they only made them for a pretty short period of time. So the fact that you have one is kind of spectacular. And
yeah. Well, do you want to buy it?
No, but
it's so great.
You might want to try contacting the Museum of Television Radio.
Yeah, I think it's right next to the Vectrex.
So one thing, so the funny thing is, other than GameCube progressive scan and a progressive scan, I mean, this thing did 480p. That's why I bought it. You know, that's why I paid for it at the time. This TV, I got it like 7 years ago, to give you an idea of how old this thing is. There aren't many people who can say they have a 7-year-old HD TV.
No.
Not in 2009.
And none of them are happy about it, apparently.
Not in this dimension.
Probably not. I didn't hate my TV. I mean, I liked it for what it did. But when I got an Xbox 360 last summer, I was looking forward to it. It was like, finally I have like a true HD source.
I bet that I bet that TV confused the shit out of the 360.
It did.
What the hell? Why is this not widescreen? It's HD.
Oh, did you play everything letterbox?
No.
Played everything crushed, I bet.
I own this TV for 6 years without realizing that it doesn't have 720p mode. So it goes from 480p to 1080i. And so I can't do anything with 720p, which would be most Xbox 360 games. So that's out the window. And then I can't really run it in 1080i because the 1080i format is only widescreen. There is no 4x3 option for 1080i. It's a standard thing. So Xbox 360 will output 1080i to my TV, but it outputs it in 16x9, meaning the sides of the screen are chopped off. And the first time I tried this, the 360 game I had was GTA 4, and I could not see the radar, which means that game is unplayable.
Terrible, because I thought the easiest thing would just be if it was kind of like squashed in, you could just squash it down, and then you'd just play it.
There's no way to do it. No.
That's terrible. That's a real problem.
And so for the past year, I've played my Xbox 360 in 480p, same as my Wii. And it looked good for what it was, but you know, I'm not really playing my 360 games in HD, so I have text problems and certain things. Anyway, all of this was just to say that I decided not to bring this hulk of a weird-ass HD TV with me when I moved.
Transporting it would have been fun, I'm sure.
So anyway, I left it behind, and so I've been without a TV for the past week. I did one of the first things I did when I got my internet up and running here, though, was to go online and start shopping for a new TV, and my plan was to buy
a lightweight LCD
TV that I can take back with me easily.
Get a Samsung
when I go back to Colorado. So,
John, corporate shill for Korean companies. Yeah. It's 2009.
No, Samsung just makes really good LCDs. That's all.
Yeah, I shopped around and very quickly settled on the one I wanted, and I ordered it. So it's actually getting here tomorrow. So next week I'll have some really cool new business. I don't know what. But I'll have a lot of console games to talk about. This week, I haven't played shit because I don't have a TV. But the one game I have been playing is Half-Life 2 Episode 2, which I bought almost 2 years ago on Steam and have never played.
I remember us talking about you having it like a year and a half ago.
Well, I mainly got the Orange Box to play Half-Life 2 itself, the original, which I'd never had before, and Portal. And then for a while, I got really into Team Fortress 2, which I still would like to go back to at some point when I have time. But I just, you know, just very, it took me like a year to get around to playing episode 1, and then it took me almost another year to get around to episode 2. But I finally started up. I've heard that it's much, much better than episode 1. I'm not necessarily seeing that right now. It's certainly less generic than episode 1 was. But I'm not sure that I am super blown away by it yet. So far, I've spent a couple hours, climbing around tunnels underground, which is not my favorite thing to do, but at least I'm not fighting waves and waves and waves of zombies, which is pretty much the only thing there was in episode
one. It's more like a roller coaster than Half-Life 2 episode 1. There's a lot of these weird scripted events around you that you have to kind of go through.
Yeah.
Well, when you get out of the tunnels, it does something somewhat unusual for the Half-Life games in that it's actually open field combat.
Oh, that'll be interesting. It kicks in some heavy metal music, and yeah, I'm sure that's what they do. So, I don't know. You know, I'm not the biggest Half-Life fan, but it was something to do this week, and it kind of helped me cross something off my, you know, list of shame. I guess James, would you say I'm like maybe halfway through it? I'm at the boss of the underground part, I think.
Yeah, you're about halfway through it. There's a fairly lengthy sequence when you get out of the tunnels that takes place.
All right. So anyway, that's the only game I've got this week, but I'm very excited about my new TV. James.
Yes.
Do you have anything to report on?
I'm an enigma. It's kind of in more ways than one. It's kind of funny that you talked about the new TV because I guess y'all read the email I sent around asking about these cables that I found for the Wii because I have a monitor that's HD and I'd rather like to use it as my primary TV instead of this piece of crap I've got sitting up here. And the problem is it's a monitor, so they don't tend to have all the nice inputs of a TV, but that's part of where you save money on getting a monitor versus a TV.
Right.
So the Wii in no way can connect to this monitor, period, because it only has VGA and HDMI. So 360 is fine because I have an HDMI 360. So Nintendo, in their infinite wisdom, have not released anything besides component or the standard composite video cables. So what I found is a device or a company that sells a VGA cable for the Wii that comes out as 480p. So I've ordered that, and hopefully I'll have a review for it.
Are they just like kind of cross-wiring it from component?
I think there's actually a converter device in the actual wire that gets enough power from the Wii system to power itself.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So,
but I mean, everything I've read indicates that it has good picture. The only problem is that it can't output 480i.
Oh yeah, that's common though with VGA cables. So you're not gonna play Mad World on it. You can't.
Yeah. So
you'll get a black screen.
Yeah. And see, this is a problem because there's no excuse for any game on the Wii to be 480i.
Right. But there are some, and you know, 2IP used to complain about this a lot because he used to play his GameCube through a VGA converter cable.
Yes.
And, you know, he would bitch endlessly whenever a game came out that didn't have progressive scan because, I mean, he had to, like, redo his whole home theater.
Yeah, I'll
know,
have to
situation.
Move to another TV. I mean...
Yeah, it sucks.
That's what it comes down to. But, you know, I've basically resolved from this experience that I will never buy another non-progressive scan game. I don't care if it's the best game ever. If you're too fucking lazy to put progressive scan in, you don't get my money.
Well, the good news for you is that Mad World is overrated.
Yes, I've gleaned as much. And so in the interim, while I wait for this wonderful cable that hopefully will work out okay and I can write a review for it on the site.
That'll be an exciting review.
It'll be great. I went ahead and I start...
companion piece to the wand review.
Yes, they're going to come out
video
together,
blog.
Actually. Oh, yeah, video blog, the wand. All right, so in the interim, I have returned to GTA 4, which is just as dark and depressing as I remember it being.
I love this city.
Yeah.
It's my favorite
Thanks,
part.
Nice. I can't imagine why.
Yeah, that game is just so fucking depressing. Oh my god.
Yeah.
It is.
But I've also been trying to get into the fourth Ace Attorney games. They don't call it Phoenix Wright anymore. And I've got to say that I'm kind of on it right now, which is sad. Because I just came off finishing 3, which I regard as being one of the most satisfying experiences gaming I've had in years.
You probably just need to take a break, you know?
Yeah, I just don't like the characters as much. And the characters were a big deal in that series.
Mm.
They're just not as interesting. So, I mean, it's another game, and the genre itself is entertaining, but I don't know. I'm looking more forward to the Perfect Prosecutor now than I was before.
Well, and that should change up the gameplay, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's still going to be the same basic gameplay. It's just they've kind of switched up some perspective stuff, and
mm-hmm.
they've added a few new elements. So, wow.
All right, well, Greg is on cleanup duty.
Well, certain game hasn't been mentioned for a while, lacking a European release date, but I'm happy to tell you now that in September... Kirby Superstar Ultra's coming to Europe, everybody.
Oh, yay. Nice.
Which is my way of saying, this is Excite Strike Week 10.
Week 10.
Week 10.
Nice.
What the hell is it going to take? It probably didn't take Monster Games 10 weeks to make Excite Pots.
It is week 10, and there wasn't any information to be gleaned from anyone at the event last week that I went to, and I noticed that other publications also kind of, you know, sort of ferreted around a bit on that, and there's nothing, they're not saying anything. So I guess the one thing I would say about my comical invoking of Kirby Superstar appearing 12 months after it did in America is that maybe there is still hope for ExciteBots to come out one day. You never know.
It's going to come out the same week we get Disaster Day of Crisis.
The difference is you could have easily imported Kirby.
Yes,
you
know,
you cannot
key,
do that with ExciteBots.
That is a key difference indeed. But you know, the thing about it with Kirby, as they mentioned in the press materials when they were announcing the fact that it was coming out in Europe, is that it did actually sell pretty well in Japan and America, whereas ExciteBots apparently has not. So I guess that's the another key difference. But yeah, just wanted to mark the occasion. I don't know how many more times I'm going to mark the strike from now on. But yeah, it's looking pretty grim.
We could check in every now and then.
Well, if we start getting press releases that say ExciteBots still not coming to Europe, then we'll know that they're actually out to get you.
Yeah, if you get those press releases, they will have been written by me.
if that shows up in our inbox one day, I am just probably going to be sick. I'll be laughing so hard.
Yeah, it'll be like Greg at LeahyPR.com. Contact Greg at LeahyPR.com. Thank you.
Yeah, and and by the way, just in terms of the reverse of this situation, games coming out here, I understand that this week America got Hurry Up Hedgehog,
thank you.
Drink it in, read the review, decide whether you would like it or not.
Hog Strike finally ends. Thank you.
All right, I think we need to do a U.S. review of Hurry Up Hedgehog. So John, can you go ahead and get our PR wheels spinning on that?
I'll get right on that.
You have a review.
The problem
to do,
is that it'll end up getting sent to me again.
Damn, he's on to us, John.
All right,
hey Greg, review this.
Anyway, I'm going to get on to what I've been playing. So I picked up, this is a 2-year-old game actually, this is Puzzle League, Planet Puzzle League for the DS, or Puzzle League DS as it's called over here. So Mike Sklens, good old RFN co-founder Mike Sklens, reviewed this back in the middle of 2007. He gave it a 9.5, very good
review. If I tell him that you're talking about it on this episode, he might actually listen to it.
Well, so you know, I saw it for a pretty, you know, pretty good price over here. Thought, you know, this would be a good game to play on the train or whatever. You know, already got a few moments to spare, so I picked it up. Never played a Puzzle League or Tetris Attack or Panelled Upon or whatever game before, except for, you know, playing Henry Hatsworth.
Which is tangentially related at best.
It's pretty well. The puzzle game is basically the same on the bottom as the, you know, match three. But so this is my first time with it. You've got the touchscreen controls; they work really nicely. I think it makes it, you know, sort of very, you can play sort of very quickly and intuitively with those, and you can hold it book style, which I quite like. I don't know. I guess it's just a, yeah, you know, mostly kind of feel kind of thing, but just holding the system feels a bit better like that, and that works really well. And I guess the main thing to say about it, other than, you know, I guess if you've tried this game, you know, this kind of puzzle game, you either like it or you don't. It's not one of the most complicated puzzle designs out there for sure, but it's so feature complete. I mean, it's quite shocking for a Nintendo game.
That's true.
You know, I mean, you've got all these different modes. You've got like a daily play mode that they like to put in with stuff like Picross and stuff to get you to keep coming back and sort of, you know, tracking your little scores on specific modes every day. You've got these like individual puzzles modes, or almost like levels, you know, that you work through. They get increasingly complex. We have to try and clear all the blocks in a fixed number of moves that are quite, you know, cool kind of brain teasers, you know, different kind of gameplay. You've got all these different score attack modes. Then you've got the multiplayer, which you've got single card and multi-card. You've got online multiplayer, which supports voice chat. I mean, it has got everything you could ever want, you know, in this game. And I mean, I doubt I'll probably ever plunder all of it, you know, because I don't necessarily have anyone to play with, you know, that's played the game before or whatever, you know, to get a kind of rivalry going or whatever. But I mean, it's a really, really nice package done by Intelligent Systems, actually.
I will say, I do have this game, Greg. I do have
this game. Oh, you
do? That's
cool.
Yes, I do.
Just declaratory, I do have this game.
Well, yeah.
You guys can play each other online, but I think, I mean, voice chat is a feature that should always be included if possible.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, this is not a game where you're going to be talking about the gameplay itself. This is a game where you're playing online and you're talking about football.
You're talking about Brett Favre.
Because there's nothing to say about playing
about
a puzzle
dead
league.
Silence.
I mean, while you're playing it, there's no smack talk. There's no strategy. There's no laughing at something crazy that just happened. It's just
I think Meteos probably even would have had more capacity for that because
probably.
You know, like, you know how like you can see what's going on other people's screens, like they had the little displays. So you know, you could to some extent see that. Oh, I've sent over a load of garbage over there. They look like they're completely buggered, and then they get out of it somehow in some improbable way. You know, there's a little more of that in Meteos, but Puzzle League, yeah, I don't really see it. But like you said, it's just good that they included it. You know,
I mean, it's a convenience feature.
Yeah, it's not the most sort of like important game, but there's just every so. I think this is something Intelligent Systems have done since. In Shadow Dragon, the Fire Emblem remake, I believe also includes
and it. And also Advance Wars Days of Ruin.
Yeah, which is them too, isn't it? So I guess they've been, other than Pokemon, they've pretty much put out all the voice chat games on the DS, on Prime Hunters, of course. But certainly the ones that have been recently. So, you know, credit to them. And I think what they've been busy with recently is WarioWare Do It Yourself.
Okay.
Because I know a lot of people have been wondering what they've been doing since, like, Super Paper Mario and stuff. But I think it's mostly handheld games, as we've mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, pretty good. But, you know, the Puzzle League, you know, if you like it, it's got to be a no-brainer. I mean, it is, you know, such a great package for it. And if you can find it for a good price, even if you're not mad on it, I think it's a pretty good time killer. And I think pretty soon we'll get the DSi version, because it's already been out in Japan since January.
Oh, that's right.
So it must be coming sometime soon. And that is basically, you know, Dr. Mario Express. It's exactly like that, but for Puzzle League.
Okay,
you know,
it's really stripped down.
No multiplayer. You know, really simple version. So a bit weak on the, but it'll probably be about 500 points or whatever. And the last thing I want to talk about is I've got Super Mario Kart for the Japanese Virtual Console. This is my first time playing Super Mario Kart, really, to it. Not quite ever, but to any significant extent. You know, I've tried it with other people's, but you know, other people's consoles or whatever, but not really sort of got into it, and that was a long time ago. So it is interesting to see how far the series has come, how much it's changed. And I mean, it is much more like a conventional racing game back then, you know, because there was much less movement in the field in terms of, you know, people, you know, catching up and falling back, and you know, there's a lot less sort of craziness with the weapons. You know, they haven't got the really ridiculously sort of powerful ones like Bullet Bills and the Blue Shell and all the stuff that came later. And it seems, maybe it's just with the whole 2D thing, but it seems quite difficult to actually sort of connect even with just the shell sometimes. So they're kind of, it's more of an isolated incident. And in fact, if you do get hit, the punishment is a lot worse. You know, you spin and you're still for quite a while. And because of the way it is, it's a much harder to catch up. It has a different rhythm to it that's more like a usual sort of racing game. And because the tracks are all flat, they're much more about the cornering, you know, because that's all you can really do. You can't do all the kind of, you know, the terrain and all that sort of stuff that you get with the 3D ones.
Well, and it doesn't have the power slide boost.
No, it doesn't have anything like the wiggle that you did with the subsequent games to build up a boost or whatever. You can do the hop and sort of slide, but yeah. So I mean, it is more straightforward. It plays very differently. I mean, I guess it plays pretty well. I mean, I like it. I can enjoy it. And I mean, I haven't really gone into the two player or anything, which would probably be the main reason why people would pick this up, you know, maybe.
Battle mode actually was why people liked it so much, I think.
Yeah, the fond memories of the battle mode or whatever, playing Grand Prix together, you know, probably is one of the main reasons to pick it up. But I do like it. And I guess one of the main reasons I kind of feel this way about F-Zero as well, that the 3D element is all well and good and all that, but I do kind of like those old school tracks where it's all about the cornering. you know? Because it just feels a bit more sort of pure race. It feels like it puts it a bit, the onus on you a little more, and like mastering the controls and stuff. I kind of like that, and you know, that this really does play up to that. So it's fun, and I just hope everyone else gets it pretty soon. It's so strange that Super Mario Kart's taken this long to come out anywhere.
Is that a recent release in Japan?
Yeah, it was the start of this month.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean it's been rated, but I think by everyone now, so it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, they're just sitting on it waiting for a week that there's nothing else to put
yeah,
on.
But they're like sitting on Smash Brothers in America as well. I mean, they seem to be sitting on quite a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think they're just saving these games for when there's not a significant WiiWare title. And they're just like, fuck, we need to put something out. And...
yeah, I mean, I have to say, I mean, the past few weeks, the past two, three, four, maybe 4 weeks, the WiiWare release schedule has been stacked.
Yeah, and like, I don't think they want to take away from either a big WiiWare release or a big Virtual Console release by putting out another one.
Well, I mean, they haven't really launched anything very significant in terms of Virtual Console since Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
But I think because the focus lately has been on DSiWare and also like WiiWare finally getting things that are worth downloading, that they just haven't wanted to draw too much attention to Virtual Console, so they're releasing crap like Nobunaga's Ambition.
Sweet.
yeah, finally.
But and, now.
Know, Clay Fighter, whatever.
Was it Genghis Khan 2 or something? Was it?
Genghis Khan 2, The Reckoning.
Because 2 is just, you had to have it.
I would actually prefer if it was Genghis Khan 2 and there was never a Genghis Khan 1.
All right, so that's going to be the end of New Business, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Listener Mail. Okay, we're back for part two of episode 151, and we're going to do your listener mail, catching up after a couple weeks off here. So, John has the first one.
Marcos writes, I just wanted to say that your podcast is great. I really like the retroactive section. I just would like to suggest talking about the weekly editions on WiiWare, VC, and DSiWare, because there is some stuff in there that a lot of people don't know about, and it would be nice if you could recommend some stuff. Especially now that the VC section on the website hasn't been updated in a long time. Thanks all, you are the best, and greetings from Mexicali. Oh, VC recommendations.
As the director of the site, would you care to comment on the
Yeah, VC recommendations, they're a bitch to keep going because they aren't like, I mean, the thing is, the reason why that we can keep doing reviews and previews of games is because we get review copies.
And people want those.
Correct.
Even when they're my do-it-all.
Exactly. And the thing is, we have no way of getting Wii points from Nintendo. So we're kind of behind the eight ball there. I mean, every once in a while, we've kind of been hit off with some in the past, but that's the main thing.
Yeah. Every now and then on our birthday.
Yeah. But they are few and far between. So that's really tough for us because that means that we have to come out of pocket. And, you know, in order to get full coverage, most games.
It's very expensive.
Yeah.
And most games on the service are shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or close to it, and it's not fair to us to ask our staff members to pay for games they know that are they're going to hate.
Yeah, for example, if you think that anybody on staff was going to pay $5 for Pit Stop 2 on the Commodore 64,
done.
You're dead wrong. I couldn't even make somebody do that. I wouldn't even do it myself. So
yeah. And the other thing is,
I think you should now.
A lot of our people who are, you know, good at writing reviews and write a lot of reviews and, you know, would probably be the kind of people who would be motivated to do Virtual Console recommendations are completely swamped in actual game reviews right now. So, and including some DSiWare and WiiWare stuff, although less because, again, those come out of pocket usually. But, dude, I think Neil is writing like 3 reviews a week.
Yeah, he needs to.
Yeah.
So I'd rather him review $50 games than $5 games, generally speaking, all being equal.
In terms of this whole thing about, you know, us talking about the games, and we kind of talked about this a bit ago where we kind of eased it out that, you know, the whole, you know, download Mondays or whatever kind of changed a lot, because it used to be all virtual console games, and therefore you could comment on those without having downloaded them, because you might not have played them in the past, or there's an abundance of information out there on them. Occasionally you get farces involving JJ and Jeff, but
well, and plus, you know, there used to be two or three virtual console games a week, so we could talk, you know, we could list them off on the show. And if we talked about one of them that we were actually familiar with, it was a segment. But now that we're down to one a week, probably none of us have played it.
Yeah, there's a good chance that you're just not familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, with the new games, well, they're new games. You know,
that hasn't stopped us before, though. I mean,
we've made
some good segments out of Cocteau Fishing Master. I mean,
classic, actually.
That was not a
completely
new game,
hilarious. Yes.
But you know,
I don't think when he says recommend some stuff that he means make fun of things based off their name, screenshots, or box art, or, you know, or promotional art.
I think
or whatever.
The product description itself was all we needed to.
Yeah, the product description. Yeah, exactly.
Sure. And we read that stuff and keep on top of it. And if we see something Choaniki of worthiness,
if I see something Choaniki like, I'm calling the police.
We will certainly bring it to the show and read it and talk about it if we think it's funny. But just lately, it's
been,
you know, and it's certainly not that there hasn't been anything worth downloading. I'm actually kind of once I get my TV, I've got some stuff to catch up on, but it's mostly WiiWare stuff.
And of course, with DSi, where there's a limited number of people that have DSIs, the only one of us is John.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's the issue there.
To some extent, it's sample size, having the regular crew here. And also, let me just say in our defense, and I don't want to just make excuses here, because I definitely think, you know, Marcos has a point here. I'm not sure how long he's been listening to the show. He may not realize that we used to do this regularly, and after a while, it started to kind of drag a lot from week to week because of some of these issues that we're talking about, and that's why eventually we stopped doing it regularly. But when we have been playing something on a downloadable game, we do talk about it. Mm-hmm. Greg just talked about Super Mario Kart. Greg does it almost every week.
that's the Japanese virtual console for you.
Though. I mean, I just talked about Space Harrier.
Yeah, I did Majora's Mask a couple weeks ago, and of course, we're doing Retroactive, which are almost all virtual console games.
For the purposes of Europe, Altered Beast came out tonight, so everywhere's got Altered Beast.
Power up.
Now.
I will probably download Altered Beast on Virtual Console Arcade when it's available.
For some reason it was 900 points here, though, and I can't fathom that.
That's 800 points too many.
What is it, an import arcade? Are you telling me there weren't Altered Beast arcade cabinets in Europe? Really? I don't understand that.
Well, the thing with the arcade is that there's really no pricing standard at all.
I guess so, but I just the only thing is the Space Harrier was 800, you know, and Space Harrier and Altered Beast and Golden Axe are all 800 in Japan, so there was some sort of precedent there. And then 900 is a weird, is an odd number, you know, odd figure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seldom is that used.
Well, Choaniki
is worth every penny.
So. All right, The Fleece writes, I just wanted to congratulate the entire RFN crew, old and new, for making 150 episodes. It's not an easy feat, and your dedication and tenacity is only matched by listeners. Thanks so much for coming together every week to talk Nintendo and games in general. The podcast was my introduction to NWR. We like to hear that. And after listening for some time, I joined the forums. We like to hear that. And was able to connect with great minds that appreciated games on a more realistic level that I have yet to be matched on any other site. I'm not sure that he actually joined our forums. Maybe he joined some forums. No.
Ding.
I kid our forum listeners. Our forum
Hold
readers.
On, I have 86 spam posts to delete. I'll be right back.
I like our forums. I post on our forums, except when they troll my gamer girl.
That's
blog.
What I like.
Damn.
Our forums.
Oh, come on! No, he was opening that up.
That's a bad article.
Snack.
It's a joke. It's a joke article. I mean,
I know, but you really expect that people are going to show sort of deferential respect for a joke article?
No, it's not that. It was just sheer ignorance of the topic. Anyway, continuing with the email from The Fleece. My only question is concerning Wii peripherals. I feel that Nintendo has introduced too many peripherals for the Wii without introducing game titles that feature their use. I was wondering, mostly based on hilarity, what a game that used most or all of the peripherals for Wii would look like. Again, thanks for the podcast.
Oh,
because it saves my
one of those one-man bands.
Odama. It would look like Odama.
You know, they could probably do Odama as WiiWare point. Or even, they could almost put it on DSiWare. I mean, you have almost all the input stuff that you would need.
Oh, God. That game is... All right, let's see. Use the GameCube microphone so you could give orders to your troops.
Mm-hmm.
And while using the GameCube controller, it also used the bongos.
Yeah.
It was going to use the bongos.
It was in there at E3 at one point, I know.
Yeah, I think the final game did not have the bongos.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's what you'd get. Imagine a game that uses Wii Motion Plus, the zapper with the nunchuck.
And Wii Speak.
And Wii Speak.
And the balance board.
And the balance board.
And the Wii Wheel.
You missed something. The vitality sensor.
That could be on your big toe.
You guys know in Superman 2 at the end where the woman walks into the electromagnetic field and all the metal attaches to her body and she becomes truly terrifying? That's what I'm envisioning, except it's all white instead of silver.
This isn't Nintendo stuff. We actually got an amusing press release I read at work today, since I still don't have a computer. It is the headline, quote, Nitho announces Wii Motion Plus accessory lineup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So there's a bunch of bundles, and I think our listeners should hear these because they're funny. So this is essentially new accessories that this third-party company out of Italy, so it's shady already, is releasing that basically just have enough space for the Wii Motion Plus. The tennis racket, baseball glove, golf club, a charging dock, the revolver 2-in-1 remote nunchuck with ergonomic handle, the sport pack, a collection of sport handles including tennis, golf, and baseball, the sport and drive that includes a Wii wheel and, quote, IR pass through port with easy in-game programming. What?
Yeah. I was like, huh?
The super kit, a collection of sport clubs, a sword, ping pong bats, and revolver. Do what? And the super all-in-one contains more than 20 accessories.
What the hell could be in a package of 20 Wii accessories?
And none of these do anything. That's the best part.
Yeah.
But that's the weird thing, because their product line ranges from all these plastic handles that don't do anything to something that does something that sounds crazy, an infrared pass-through port that lets you program your games. What the hell is that? It's like a game genie that attaches to the pointer or the sensor bar. I don't know,
but there's their website is a thing of comedy. I'll put it that way.
I bet.
If you get the chance, go look at what their baseball bat add-on to the Wii Remote looks like, because it looks like things.
Are you suggesting it looks like something other than a baseball bat?
It looks like something we can't discuss on this podcast. I found their programming pass through. It doesn't. It's just a hole. It's a hole in the steering wheel. That's the ergonomic bat or the IR pass through.
But the official Wii wheel already has a pass through for infrared.
They actually have three different Wii wheels on their website.
Jesus.
I guess with respect to this issue of them actually introducing these accessories and not making that much use of them, I mean, the two examples, I guess, we talked about Wii Speak before. You know, that hasn't been used very much by Nintendo since Animal Crossing. Apparently Endless Ocean 2 is going to use it, which I think is very sensible. I mean, really quite sort of necessary. Hopefully that's a sort of portent of things to come as far as, you know, co-op play in other Nintendo games. Vitality sense is so weird because it didn't even get introduced with a game at all. Just completely bizarre.
At one point we were speculating that it was just something like, hey, you know, we're still looking at ideas.
Well, apparently Satoru Iwata gave an interview with I think it was The Times in London, where he was showing the interviewer something that, you know, some sort of demo of what this vitality sensor was being used for. Something to do with, like, you know, there was like a silhouette of your body, and you kind of had to make it fill up with blue by being calm, and, you know, it was always sort of quite strange, abstract stuff. So they obviously got something, but they didn't want to show it at E3. I guess it doesn't seem well suited to E3.
Wii Vitality Training.
It's like, oh, I'm really nervous on stage. Here's a game about being calm.
Well,
I heard an interesting suggestion that it could possibly be used for like a very crude lie detector. Which, if you think about what, I don't really think Nintendo would be making the kind of game where that could be useful. But if you think about the psychological stuff they're doing in Silent Hill for Wii,
yeah,
with the, you know, cool. You're taking the psych tests in the beginning, and that determines, you know, what if you have a game that's like giving you a diagnostic to help determine things that are going to happen later. Eternal Darkness, I mean, is the obvious kind of application for this. But like, what if Eternal Darkness can tell when the game is scaring you and like crank it up even more, or, you know, do something like that?
I guess another kind of application would be, you know, if you think of something like your kind of bit trip beat kind of thing, talk about how it gets more visually complicated when you're doing well, could have a similar sort of feedback in terms of, you know, the more sort of agitated you get, the more kind of crazy it gets visually, so it gets more confusing. So it's kind of trying to get you to enter this sort of zen state of coolness to play it better.
Yeah.
I mean, these sorts of complementary kind of things. That's the thing. It's hard to imagine a dedicated piece of software built around. And this is, you know, like these complementary uses are kind of easy to imagine, but of course that's the whole thing. Like, each of these Nintendo accessories have had a primary vehicle, whether it's Animal Crossing, Mario Kart, Link's Crossbow Training, etc., etc.
Well, Wii Speak hasn't really, but that's the exception so far.
And I think that's a game that if it weren't a game we all already own, would have been particularly well suited to the game.
Well, I mean, considering it's supposedly a communication game and what all.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was the first time that I had an Animal Crossing, so,
yeah, so
I
in your case,
it was kind of nice for me because it was the first time experience that I got, and then you get it with the Wii Speak. So, you know, it was, and of course, you know, considering the Wii's reach out to a broader audience, that might be the experience for quite a lot of people that bought that game. So,
sure.
I see what you mean.
No,
it's
but
not
it's not like Animal Crossing was built around Wii Speak.
No,
or
it,
that, I mean, you know, I'm not suggesting that it's a poor match.
Yeah, so, but that's the thing, isn't it? Like, the thing with the vitality thing, it just seems like it would be sort of so peripheral, it's like really difficult to kind of do. I don't know, unless you design, you know, a very specific kind of,
well,
very specific,
I mean,
kind of game.
I think it's actually going to be used with King of Clubs 2 to make sure that you still have a pulse and that you haven't killed yourself.
Yeah, don't worry, you will. You'll find a way. Or you'll actually have found a way to kill everyone involved in the game's creation.
James,
I think we've lost ourselves for a minute.
James, we're gonna move from the vitality sensor to the zapper with the next email.
The zapper, yeah. So Andy from Iowa, aka Drew MG, writes, "Hello RFN, I broke down and purchased a Wii Zapper and Link's Crossbow Training used for $15 last week. This comes after months upon months of berating the very existence of the stupid little plastic shell. Anyway, I started playing LTC, as all the hip kids call it, and found it to be a lot more fun."
The hip dyslexic kids.
"I found it a lot more fun than I expected. It certainly puts Wii Play to shame." Well, that's not saying a helpful lot. I put probably a couple of hours into it by now, which is a couple of hours more than I ever would have expected to play it. Anyways, how many of you guys have used the Zapper? What do you think? And do you see Nintendo supporting it whatsoever in the future?
I have not ever used the Zapper.
I have used it once.
I have never used the Zapper.
So yeah, I, as people may remember, I expressly bought Crossbow Training off eBay with the intent of avoiding getting the Zapper. So yeah, I'm not really well positioned to comment here, James.
There was one kiosk at E3 that had it. And I can't remember what the game was.
Oh, now. Right. So a game at E3 wanted to show off the fact that it was using.
That it could be played with the Zapper, yes. And right. I remember thinking, this is kind of awkward. I don't really like this.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a real shame Nintendo didn't come out with something better. And
that's yeah, a lot of people seem to say that, you know, that obviously, yeah, it's just a shell and it's never going to be, like, you know, functionally important or whatever, but they just could have made a much better one than they did.
Yeah, and the sad thing is the shell that they, the sort of shotgun-style shell that they showed for it in 2006 at E3 was a lot cooler than what they eventually did release with the Zapper.
And that wasn't even a shell. That had a built-in nunchuck, didn't it?
Yeah, maybe. I think you're right. It's been a while since I saw it.
Yeah, yeah, obviously. Yeah, it was 2006.
At the very least, it would have been better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny because the best light gun I used at E3 was the one that requires you have to have... I used during the Nyko demo, which requires you use the wand. Mm-hmm. Because it uses that port technology they have, so the button press of the trigger isn't mechanical. There's no connecting little piece of plastic to the...
Yeah.
It actually sends it through the...
Is an actual sort of button.
Than like a remote trigger.
Yeah, I mean, there's a myriad of shells out there, isn't there, other than the Zapper?
Yeah.
I guess so. You know, if you
well,
if
Neatho makes one out of Italy.
I mean, I like Crossbow Training too. I think it's a good bit of fun if you can get it for the right price.
I still want to play it. I would definitely pick it up for $5.
It's fun.
Bucks.
I mean, it doesn't make sort of maximum use of the, you know, the stuff in Twilight Princess. You know, leave some interesting kind of stuff off the table, but it is kind of cool and plays fine. Just normally, obviously you're not under any obligation to use the Zapper, but I mean, you could underestimate how much of a big deal this is. I mean, I think they've sold about 4 million nearly of these Lynx Crossbow Trainings and Zapper bundles, which I think is nearly as many as they sold the Twilight Princess, funnily, you know.
Yeah, so.
I mean,
do you think that's part of what's driving the surge of light gun games on Wii?
I think it's just a particularly well suited
system. I mean, beyond, you know,
it.
Bullshit like Chicken Shoot, but like actual big budget light gun games.
Chicken Shoot.
I wonder if it's the Zapper sales that are kind of telling people, hey, there's a market out here for...
Yeah, there's an appetite, you know, for at least this kind of game, at the very least. You know, whether they end up kind of thinking, ah, actually, you know, the shell's kind of lame or whatever. You know, they may still think, you know, they like just that, you know, shooting gallery kind of gameplay on Wii.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if people who would buy the Zapper are interested in M-rated light gun games, which there are a lot of this year.
Well, but... Umbrella Chronicles apparently sold pretty well, the original. So
yeah.
There's that too.
True.
And I think that sold something in around 1 million copies or whatever. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it is sort of proven. I mean, in terms of when Andy says about, would you see Nintendo supporting it in the future? I mean, you know, as I said, supporting the Zapper isn't really... In a sense, even possible, but I mean there are issues of button mapping and configuration and stuff, which I suppose is that I think Andy's mentioned as well. But in terms of the fundamentals of the gameplay, they're going to be the same. But I guess, I mean, would Nintendo consider doing another light gun type game, considering how well this has sold? I mean, it's a fine question.
I don't see why not.
Maybe, I mean, Duck Hunt.
Yeah, I still think they should go back to Duck Hunt.
You know, some sort of Punch-Out style kind of, you know, trade off everyone's nostalgia Duck Hunt. You would think it's kind of a lot.
Where you can actually shoot the fucking dog.
And what would be great is if they sort of package Duck Hunt with a Zapper 2, like a redesigned Zapper.
that sounds good.
Yeah, sorry, we effed up the first Zapper. Here's the new one. Well, it'll be like the classic controller Pro or whatever.
So it wouldn't be.
Yeah,
complete,
I mean, you probably thought they were never going to fix the fact that the analog sticks were too close together and the cord came out of the bottom. But eventually,
the classic controller Pro, also known as the nobody at Nintendo knows why it's at our booth.
It's known as the oops. Here you go.
What was with
our
that?
Bad.
Where'd this come from? I don't know. It's just here.
I think the weird thing about the Zapper is it's so under-designed compared to all the light guns that Nintendo's done in the past. I mean, I don't know if... Have you guys ever used the Super Scope 6?
The Super Scope was over-designed. It was massively over-designed.
Yeah, that thing was actually like... That thing was uncomfortable on the level of Virtual Boy to use.
Yeah, I don't know whether you ever want to feel like you're in Commando or whatever.
actually, I had a Super Scope, and there was a commercial... Way back when, where the kid's like diving behind a sofa with one and like popping out to shoot it. And I was, it came on, and I think my cousin and I used to play games a lot together. it was sitting on the floor when that commercial came on, and his comment was, never, ever, ever do that. So I spent the next 20 minutes...
It was, you know, a classic stupid escalation thing. Because wasn't the Menacer, like, really big or whatever?
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, the Mega Drive one?
Yeah.
I think it got a bit phallic, and, you know, this is what happens.
The Super Scope was just so heavy, and you had to hold it up at eye level, because the whole idea was you're looking through a scope.
The Menacer, you know, had a stock, and it looked like it was an oil gun. The Super Scope was a bazooka.
Yeah.
And then the Wii Zapper is a piece of plastic that you might find holding
together.
It's
so very, like, it's kind of really not meant to seem, like, explicitly like a specific kind of gun, I think, as well.
But it looks like a Tommy gun. You know what? I'm surprised that Neato or some other company hasn't made a hollow plastic disc that attaches to the bottom of the Zapper that looks like the ammo clip from a Thompson.
Be a 1920 Chicago mobster.
There you go.
Very, very wholesome thing.
And I'm surprised EA hasn't announced a new Godfather-themed railgun shooter.
It's just armies of Frango.
I'm now just looking at the Super Scope wondering why can't we have this, and then the answer is because jackasses like me would stand behind our friends trying to watch TV from the sofa going boom 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 just to drive them insane.
Hey, look, there's no doubt the Super Scope was very cool, very impractical.
It took six AA batteries just to use the fucking...
yeah,
just to pick it up.
Completely ridiculous.
because the Menacer was wireless. I think that took two.
How many games were compatible with it?
Like five.
Yeah.
Five, and I think R&D 1 practically
one,
made them all.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, actually.
Wow.
And actually, little known fact, Odama supports the Super Scopes.
Well, the E3 bill did anyway. As long as you brought it with you on the flight, you know.
Yeah.
Work.
Oh, good thing I have... Guess what I have in my back pocket right now?
One of the games compatible with the Super Scope is, quote, Lamborghini American Challenge, and then parenthetically it notes, it accesses a different game mode from the normal one, which the only thing I could think of, well, it had damn well better since this is a racing game in Lamborghini.
Exactly. It's just where you hang out the side and shoot all the other cars, but it's a cheat.
Oh, shit! By the way, Lamborghini American Challenge is produced by Titus Interactive, shovelware manufacturer.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I don't think Titus exists anymore.
Like, no, anything with that name, like the TV series, anything with that name, Titus, just money. Pure money.
Oh, Titus. Oh, that show was awful. They made Titus published Superman 64.
They did, yes.
Yeah.
They had their little Fox logo.
Seriously, they have quite a track record.
All right, Greg has the last email.
All right, so this is from Adolf Elger in Denton, Texas, and he writes, do you think Let's Tap would have been better played with the Donkey Konga drums instead of the Wiimote and box?
You know what would have been better played with? The Wiimote box, where we actually had a fucking box.
Well, you actually get a box to tap
like
along.
That in Japan.
Apparently, you get them in Europe as well. I don't know whether they're exactly the same as Japan, but you can get one.
I don't have Let's Tap. I would like to actually play it.
John, would you grace us with some singing?
But, man, you see, I can't do it. You caught me off guard, man. Ba-da-da-da.
There you go, yeah.
Da-da-da. See, I got the magic. I just got a call on it. You know what I mean?
So
it is in the game, by the way. That is the good news.
So you just sold the game to John. John's going to play that one mini game thousands of times.
Yep.
Well, I don't have it to try, but I bet if you put your remote on the bongos, you could probably just play the bongos and, you know, it would pick up
but
in the
game.
But
there's not a lot of space left on the bongos with the Wii remote on top.
I mean, it's not like the game really has to support the bongos. It supports the remote being vibrated at all.
Yeah.
So really, you could play it on... You could put it on your belly and slap your belly if you wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, that is the novelty. You know, it really wouldn't be better, you know, because that's the whole novelty of it is, you know, it's the remote and you're just sort of touching by the side and that's enough to control it, you know. It's such a game predicated on novelty that to have something more orthodox, it would just kind of defeat the purpose, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you could probably put it on your Rock Band drums and then... use your drumsticks and play the adjacent drum
Done.
Pad. I don't see why not. Actually, that would be kind of fun, actually, to like see some like a series of YouTube videos that kind of show people playing Let's Tap with
different
mechanisms.
Put it on your car and rev up the engine every time you want.
Yeah, or see if your see if your cat can play it.
No,
like keyboard cats.
Well, apparently penguins can.
Penguins can play it. Cats cannot.
Penguins can play it in theory. In theory,
it's never been proven.
Yeah, I
want
to see.
You know what?
Video
I really wish Sega's E3 press conference had penguins walk out on stage and play Let's Tap. Because that would make
awesome.
Them game of the show right there.
That would be awesome. That would,
apparently, is you know the efficacy of it is pretty decent mm-hmm. as well. You know, it doesn't feel you feel like you can control it by this method. So.
Hey, I really the awesome song aside, I really admire Let's Tap for doing something actually new with the Wii Remote. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is everybody's like, well, you know, how can we use this thing? It does so many different things. How can we really make a game around this thing? And Sega really went way left field with it and said, let's make a game where that you can play without actually touching the controller.
It's Naka's new studio, isn't it? Probe. Like, Sega are publishing it, but it's his sort of external company that he's established, right? That actually sort
his
of,
I Want to Make Crazy Things studio.
I think it's awesome. I mean, I don't know if the game is good, but I love the idea.
I know that we don't usually talk about review scores on here, but this game has the most whacked out series of review scores.
That doesn't surprise me either.
It is all over the fucking place.
Well, it's really casual, but also super Japanese.
We have everything from an 8.5 to a 5.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
The thing is, when something's so predicated on novelty and kind of charm and you know, that sort of thing, it's very much a matter of taste.
Yeah,
that is going to vary quite considerably.
I would just say to Adolf, if you're interested in Let's Tap. It's only $30, which seems like an appropriate price point for it.
Thing is, though, for that $30, you're getting one of the best songs ever written.
Not one of the best song.
I mean, could go out and buy three of the greatest albums of all time.
You could, but why waste your time,
instead,
Johnny?
You could spend $30 on one song that you can listen to ad nauseum on the internet for free. Or on
I can't hear
podcast.
You, Johnny. The music is in my heart.
Guys, shut up. Shut up.
See? Man, this makes you happy. You can't tell me you're not smiling right now. Oh, but here it comes, though. Oh, I missed it. Yeah, I was so happy. But wait, you can see it though. Come on, Johnny, clap. See, but it builds though. It's like it's just feeding you the hors d'oeuvre. And it just grabs you. And it takes you higher, Johnny.
I can't.
it's a dance party over here.
By the way, that song goes on for 3 minutes and 40 seconds.
It's not long enough.
I wonder if that's the only song in the game. Like, Bubble Bobble.
No, they originally changed the website song to a different game song at one point.
Oh, and then people revolted.
It's a bad move. It's a bad move.
People went out in the streets with their green armbands.
Actually,
and they
released.
Where's my song?
They released a Let's Tap album, apparently.
Oh my god!
I gotta go.
guess what's on the front cover? It is a penguin looking over its shoulder at you under the Let's Tap logo for the soundtrack.
Yes. This and Cho and Nikki are like up in the pantheon now.
I think that needs to we need to secure a copy of this for research.
I agree. I'm looking right now.
I completely agree. All right, that's going to end our show. Thanks to everybody who wrote in. And if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion for the show, you can send that to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Please let us know where you're from. And before we go, I do want to mention real quick, Retroactive will be returning soon. I have up a new poll for the next one, which is going to be our 7th. And this is focused on TurboGrafx. So we have TG16, Turbo CD, a couple games. So go to the poll and check it out. And it's going to be pretty interesting for us because I think the four of us are fairly unfamiliar with this platform.
I'm unfamiliar with anything that isn't a shooter on it.
I'm pretty familiar with it.
I intentionally avoided shooters for the most part in the poll because I thought that would be a little cliche and also kind of hard to talk about.
There is one special exception. Cool.
Yes, very special. So please go vote in that. Please, I'd really love to have a lot of participation, and we're probably going to end up taking a chance, depending on what wins, on something that we don't know much about or have never played before. And I hope you will consider doing the same. Could be a lot of fun with that discussion.
It could be terrible. We'll find out.
Yeah, that poll will be closing on Thursday, July 2nd. So make sure you get your vote in before then. And one last thing. There's a new season of Radio Trivia Podcast Edition with TYP, and I helped him kick that off, and I don't know who's going to be on the next episode, but we got new music, a new fresh attitude. anyway, new episodes primarily of Radio Trivia, so get excited. Go check that out.
One more thing, because I actually mentioned this last week, but it got cut due to audio issues, but Ryan Jones, our staff artist, he said farewell to the site recently, so he has been with us for 8 years. He did a great job. He was responsible for our business cards and the look of our website, and we just like to wish him well, thank him for all the good work that he's done over the years. If you want to check out his website, it is www.ichabod.com. That's where his portfolio is, and he's a really badass graphic designer and web designer and everything like that. So thank you, Ryan. Appreciate all the hard work.
Much love.
And wish you
well. Yeah, Ryan's really an unsung hero of our site, so it's good to give him some recognition here, and we wish him the best. All right, well, that's going to be the end of 151, and check back with us next week for a brand new episode, and bye for now.
Let's tap, son.
It's the podcast, people. All right, guys. Well, we're going to do mail in the order of new business, of course.
So check it.
Look at which one.
What the fuck?
Where do I go?
Last.
John, it's real easy for you because you're first.
Oh,
you don't even really have to pay attention.
Oh, snap. That's my specialty.
I hope all of that was recorded.